Saturday, April 26th, 2008, upon further review, episode number 58. This week we take on comic playwrights, comic books, and comic takes on things you ought to know. Took us 58 episodes, but we finally got a theme. Okay, upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And welcome everyone to episode number 58. We hope everyone out there is doing well. And we want to thank everyone for being patient with us as we sort of get used to a new show schedule. We are going to be picking up the pace, I promise, but we're still, you know, working out details with our daughter. Her people are going to get back to our people, and that's basically how it's going to go. But things have been going pretty well for us, and we hope for you guys as well. First of all, before we talk about the show tonight, just mention that we're really happy about the number of comments that we've been getting. We actually, on our last one, had a bunch of comments, people talking back and forth, people emerging out of the woodwork. You know, Tim's back from Australia. That's great. I wasn't sure what had gone on with Tim. Classic Chris dropped another one of his surges of comments. You know, it was great because I get this thing in my email box where all of a sudden it's comment on episode 55, comment on episode 56, comment on episode 57. So that's great. And especially I wanted to point out Bernadette's surprisingly compelling defense. Not surprising because she did it, but just I wasn't expecting to read a comment and be really compelled by her defense of America. She was talking about it in relationship to Disney World and how it's got this, you know, this kind of can-do attitude and this positive optimism. You guys should go read the comment section on the website if you haven't already. But thanks, Bernadette, for the comments, and it sparked a very interesting discussion with everyone, and so that was great, and we really appreciate that.
Oh, speaking of which, I need to know how much it costs to ship things from America to Australia.
Why is that?
Because there is a woman on this board that
Honey,
I go
you
to.
You can't ship women to Australia. Come on now.
Every once in a while, whose husband, I guess, loves Dr. Pepper, but they don't get it anymore in, I guess, her neck of the woods in Australia. Hmm. And so I offered, if it's not ridiculously priced, that to ship them Dr. Pepper. But I need to know how much it is before I can tell her how much money she needs to send me.
Another way to look at this would be, if any of you in Australia, of our listeners, if you have Dr. Pepper, maybe
well, yeah,
you
or
could
if you
ship
know.
It,
yeah, that
and then
might
we
be
could
better.
Reimburse you.
That might be better than because I think it's probably a lot. And then also, it's not like I'm just sending a letter. We're talking like how many pounds of...
Well, how much does she want?
No, she'd like as much. Because she, I guess, allows her husband once a month to have Dr. Pepper, because it's something like a six pack is like 40, 50 bucks or something, because they have to like get it online or something. And I was just like, that's really sad, because here you can get like a 12 pack for $5.
And it's only worth about 40 cents, Dr. Pepper, huh?
Well, that was a whole other thing, because Greg has a...
Just wait if we review it, people. You're not going to like what you're gonna see what's what. Well, anyway, so if anyone has
any...
So if anyone has any suggestions then for how to ship a bunch of Dr. Pepper overseas to Australia, please let us know. We'd love to know. And please let us know if anyone likes Dr. Pepper and why. And what's wrong with you? No, I'm just kidding. So thanks to everyone, as always, for listening and spreading the word and so forth. Tonight we have our usual three things, and we originally thought that we were going to have almost a sort of thematic show, and then Clea pointed out that that wasn't where we lived. You know, there was something wrong
Bernadette's
with that.
See, now Bernadette's not going to like me. But yes, it is my fault. I wanted to make it eclectic.
She wanted to make it, as she put it, more random. And so we've done that with our review of three things. We're going to begin with a review of Oscar Wilde, the playwright. This is actually a suggestion from Chris, from Classic Chris, as he wants us to call him. And it happens that we're reviewing this not just because Chris suggested it, but because for my theater website that I do reviews for, it's not mine, but I work for them, they had me review The Importance of Being Earnest, which is Oscar Wilde's most famous play. And we just saw that 2 days ago. And so it was on our minds, and we thought it'd be appropriate to review Oscar Wilde, the playwright. Then we're going to move on to talk about something else we did last weekend, which is the New York City Comic Con. We actually went with a friend of ours, Russ, who's a former guest star in the show, in fact, who was working for Boing Boing TV. And we had a chance to go in and see it, and it was pretty interesting. And we'll talk a little bit about why it was interesting during that segment. And then we're going to conclude with our review of a video cast this time. And we want to apologize because we know we've really got about five or six shows backed up that people are, oh, can you review us? So you're all going to be, you know, shows will be reviewed in the order in which they were received. So you guys will fit in that description as well. But the show we're doing tonight is What You Ought to Know, which is a video cast about lots of things that you might not know. And so we'll talk about that at the end of the show tonight.
Sounds good.
Okay. So let's get started with Oscar Wilde. And we pulled up the official website of Oscar Wilde, which is the extraordinarily, you know, logically listed site of www.cmgww.com. Boy, that just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Let me tell you. But anyway, this is supposedly the official site for the business affairs, the estate of Oscar Wilde, and so forth. Oscar Wilde was a late Victorian England playwright, as people will probably know if you're paying attention in your high school English classes. He was a late Victorian English playwright who wrote a number of plays specifically about sort of social conditions, a lot of comedy of manners type of stuff. And he was almost as famous for his personal life as he was for his professional one, because Wilde believed that the aesthetic life was important. And so he dressed in these incredibly over-the-top aristocratic clothes, and he carried this, you know, ivory-tipped walking stick, and he went from salon to theater, and he adopted this kind of languid pose when he would go into these places. So he very much played up the artist. And, you know, he got made fun of to a degree by his contemporaries, but not as much as you might think, because he was also very charming. And really, England sort of fell in love with Oscar Wilde and the way that he sort of presented himself as a public figure. And so Wilde has an interesting sort of sublight to the end of his life, which is that Wilde's beginning process, where he was, you know, walking around and doing this kind of aesthetic thing, at the end of his life, Wilde also was homosexual. And at the end of his life, Wilde was being accused of homosexuality by a couple of people, and he ended up suing one of them, who was the father of one of his lovers, for libel. And that trial, first of all, the person that he sued was acquitted, but in the process of going through the trial, all this information about Oscar Wilde's life and going to these various, you know, baths and, you know, visiting these various young men came out, and it ended up that even though he was married with children, that she ended up divorcing him, and he ended up actually being sentenced to 2 years of imprisonment and hard labor for gross indecency. And once he left that, after he went through that 2 years, he never wrote again. He died not that long afterwards, and it was kind of a sad end to a very, you know, interesting and witty and creative life, and one that was very much dedicated to art. And so that's kind of a sad corollary, a sad end, I think, to the way that things started.
Well, there you go. I don't think anything else needs to be said.
Yes, you do. What did you think? Yes, because we just saw the importance of being earnest.
Well, no, I meant in regards to what you just said.
Oh, in regards to his thing. Yes. Yeah. Well, that part of it was sad. That's true.
Except that I thought that it was the father of his wife.
No, it wasn't. I was wrong about that originally. It was the father of one of his lovers. Yeah.
Okay.
So what did you think about the importance of being earnest? Because you said you weren't sure if you had seen this full play before, but now
I've only seen parts of it.
Okay.
And it was wonderful. We've seen quite a few plays that have been brought up to recent times, and not all of them age well, as you've said, and not all of them are necessarily very good. And in this instance, it ages quite well, and it's witty and intelligent and very pleasant.
Yeah, and one of the things that's interesting about Oscar Wilde is he also wrote a novel called The Portrait of Dorian Gray, which is pretty famous, and wrote other plays as well, but his most famous one is this one, The Importance of Being Earnest, which is really this kind of absurd plot. But a lot of what it is sort of satirizing the upper classes and the way they look at things. And some of the quotes from there are just tremendous. You know, so-and-so is currently at a lecture on the effect of a permanent income on thought. You know, I don't like, we live in an age of surfaces. Here, scroll up 1 second. The one that says, one should never trust a woman who tells one her real age. A woman who would tell one that would tell one anything. It's just chock full of these kind of witty comments on social life. And yet somehow, with all of this commentary about social conditions, it never becomes mean-spirited.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something which was true for Gilbert and Sullivan as well. One of the reasons that Gilbert and Sullivan works as satire, because they satirized without being cruel. Mm-hmm. And somehow this does the same thing. You know, nothing bad ever happens in an Oscar Wilde play. I mean, nothing really bad. Nothing bad ever happened in a Jane Austen novel either. And so while there is, you know, certainly subtle commentary being made on a lot of aspects, one of the things that Lady Bracknell, one of the characters in The Importance of Being Earnest, says is that she thinks that illness should not be encouraged in other people. And I don't know what this obsession with morbidity is. They should make up their minds whether they will live or die. You know, that kind of stuff. And certainly that's a comment on the way that the aristocratic class is abandoned. And yet there's always this sense of sort of lightheartedness about it, so that people could hopefully see their faults without feeling defensive about the reaction.
Right.
And so that was powerful too. And of course, was in stark contrast, especially late in his life, to what happened to him. You know, I mean, the fact that The Importance of Being Earnest was his last play, and then all this stuff happened at the end with his personal life, I think is interesting also.
Hmm.
What do you think? Let me just ask you this before we give a rating then. So I told you that I mentioned that he was this sort of representative of the aesthetic life, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that his representing this, because it created a whole backlash against that movement where people said that, was he himself not serious enough about the social conditions that he discussed? For example, Charles Dickens doesn't have that problem, right? Dickens is clearly always very much serious about the social conditions that he sees. Do you think Wilde, in his sort of lightheartedness, was doing a disservice by not being as serious about the social conditions?
Well, but again, he was taking a different tact, right? I mean, when you're talking about Dickens, he would show the lower classes so that you could see that they are of worth, while Wilde was, you know, showing the upper classes
and how they were not of worth.
And to show them in, you know, so that you could see what it is that they say and believe in a different light.
Mm-hmm.
So they both were taking different tacks, and again, probably with different, with also the different methodology of humor and lightheartedness.
Mm-hmm.
And so yes, in a way, I guess he wasn't as invested in what he was talking about. Maybe because he didn't think that he could make huge change, or maybe he thought subtle changes might help, or
mm-hmm.
or maybe he just thought it was funny and didn't really actually care.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think he probably cared, but I think, you know, one of the things that people often said about him was that he was literally an artist living strictly for his art. And he
right.
himself said that the aesthetic is what mattered. And I can't blame him for that. I mean, you could argue that there's a certain kind of purity to that, which is appealing, instead mm-hmm. of it always being about some social message, instead of it always hitting you over the head with, there are social messages you could glean from it, but maybe it's good that he doesn't jump into the equation and say, here's what I think about it, rather obviously. You know, he leaves it up to you.
Right.
Even more than Ibsen. Maybe that's why he ages better than Ibsen.
Right.
Because Ibsen was doing that all the time,
right.
and he doesn't, you know? I don't
right,
know.
Right. I mean, the more specific you get, the less you age well.
Yeah.
And here, you know, he doesn't give up the entertainment value at all.
Yeah, but I mean, life is much too important a thing ever to talk seriously about it, is one of his quotes. And, you know, I mean, that's
pretty
that sort of sums
it.
Up the way that he actually is.
I mean, I can also see why maybe he never wrote again. Again, if it had been like Dickens, where the message was most important to him, you'd think that the experience that he went through would have empowered him more, or empowered him in a different light.
Right.
Or at least he'd want to bounce back from it so that he could still continue to make commentary.
Right.
But the fact that he didn't, and the fact that instead he kind of broke down,
yeah.
I think speaks to kind of where he was.
Yeah. There's kind of maybe a fragility to it. And in fact, the fact he has become in modern times kind of a gay icon, in fact. He's been somebody that people have turned to, the gay community, and points to and says, you know, here is somebody who sort of described it as a healthy thing and not as mm-hmm. a horrible thing, and something which could be, you know, a positive good. And I guess there might be something to be said for the fact that the way that he lived his life was his message, you can almost
right.
argue, rather than what he said. So.
Right.
So what do you want to say for a rating?
7.
See, I think Wilde is brilliant. I think that he probably doesn't... He doesn't get to the level of Shaw for me. He doesn't get to the level of Dickens. But he's so witty. And everything he does is just so right on. In mm-hmm. a way, the one thing you can say about him is he wasn't as productive as he could have been. You know, maybe
right.
if he had been sitting down to write a bit more, we would have had more from him. But in terms of what he produced, it's hard to argue about how influential it was. I'd say an 8, at least,
okay,
is what
that's
I would
fine.
Do. An 8?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so an 8 out of 10 for Oscar Wilde. And if you have not had a chance, please go check out his plays. As I said, and particularly The Importance of Being Earnest is by far his best play, but there are other ones that are good as well. And The Picture of Dorian Gray is also a good book, so you should check that out also.
Okay.
All right. Okay, next thing that's on the docket for tonight is the New York City Comic Con. This can be found at www.nycomiccon.com. NYC, basically New York Comic Con.com. And the New York Comic Con is basically a massive comic slash gaming slash costume slash kind of geek fest, I guess you might say, on the Eastern Seaboard. It's actually the largest one on the Eastern Seaboard, and it was at the Javits Center, which is, for people who have been listening to us for a while, you'll remember we reviewed Digital Life a little while ago. Mm-hmm. That was also at the Javits Center, so that's
right.
where this was too.
Right.
And we went with our friend Russ, who was working, as I said, for Boing Boing TV. In fact, if you go over to Boing Boing TV, you can just do a search for it on Google, you'll see both myself doing a little correspondent thing about games. You'll also see our daughter, who makes a cameo, and and Clea also in a very brief moment looking at
supporting
our daughter, who's making in a supporting role, exactly.
Supporting role.
But it was fun. So what did you think about it? First of all, describe what it was like for you, because you hadn't been to something, you've been to Gen Con, but you hadn't been to something like this.
Again, I think that for most people, it's the same kind of thing. I mean, when you deal with, I guess, this, for lack of a better word, geekdom, everywhere you know, it's the same kind of, mostly, usually it's the same kind of people. They just like take on different forms. So I've been to Gen Con where it's gaming,
right?
But you'll have people walking, like Klingons walking besides woodland elves, you know? So it's kind of an opportunity.
There's some tension there, by the way.
No, I mean, but it's kind of an opportunity for everyone to come out of the woodwork. And so this is one of those opportunities because honestly, there shouldn't have been any games there, board games. And there was a whole
Are
board game.
Are you mad?
It's not, they have nothing to do with comics.
Are you mad?
No.
Are you?
No, I mean, that's the thing. But there was a whole section on board games. Why? Because it's the same kind of population, and they're there to try to sell their merchandise.
Well, and in fairness, some of the games do have connections to the comics. I mean,
some.
And there's a lot of interpollination now where, you know, games get made into comics. In a lot of cases, games get made into board games. That's one thing I never expected. You can imagine a board game going to a computer game, or a movie going to a computer game, or a computer game going to a movie. But now it's become the case where a lot of video games go into board games.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's a video game to board game to movie, you know, so there's a lot of connection between those disciplines. You know?
Very true. I mean,
those mediums.
I mean, it wasn't surprising to see them there. I just kind of confirmed, I guess, this, what was the word you said? Interpollination?
Interpollination, yes. Okay, that's my new word for the day.
I think it's a good word.
Good.
Okay. So,
Should we have a new word for the week?
That might be a little bit tough to come up with, but yeah, we could.
Especially since they're just making them up. Interpolation's our word for the week. That's not a word. Shut up. It's our word for the
week.
That's
probably a word.
Oh, it is now.
All right.
All right. So it's that
big,
same group of
big
people.
Big room with a bunch of the same people dressing up and
No, wait a minute. I have to interrogate this a little bit. Now let's go back to that for a second. Now, when you say
they
the
might
same
be people.
People.
Like these might be the people that like to dress up as comic
but
heroes.
But what's the kind of people that we're talking about? I mean, let's parse this.
Okay,
what do you
so
mean?
So we get there, and of course, the first thing I had to do was go to get my Starbucks. Now, I'm sorry,
naturally.
Bernadette, but I did. I had to get my chai latte.
Had to.
So I get in line, and who am I behind? Leia. Who is in her Return of the Jedi slave girl outfit. And she has a chain
right
around her neck,
yes.
which is being held by
Jabba?
Stormtrooper.
A stormtrooper? Okay, well, that's anachronistic, first of all. The stormtroopers did not approve of Jabba's operations. They kind of winked and nodded. Let's just be honest here, okay? Sorry. But that is the kind of thing you would have heard in that same line, is people going, you know, really, Stormtrooper
right.
should not be holding the chain of the Leia girl.
I got it, honey.
Right.
So,
just letting you know.
So that was my first kind of introduction. And then, you know, later on, I started seeing more comic, you know, people like all of the... there were a number of different groups of friends that I saw where each of them was one of the bad guys from Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that a few different times. But obviously, it's an opportunity for people to pull out their outfit. In some instances.
Well, it's why people like Halloween. It's another chance to have Halloween and not have people laugh at
you. Okay, so Comic-Con is another chance to have Halloween
yes.
and not have them laugh at
That's
you.
That's right. Well, but I guess the reason I'm asking this question is, do you think that we'll talk about some of the things that we saw there, but do you think conventions like this then are damaging that people, you know, that is sort of, well, because, I mean, when you keep seeing these kinds of people and they come out of the woodwork and...
Well, I mean, this is for a particular group, okay? I mean, if you don't like comics and you don't like games... Why would you go?
Why would you live? I'm sorry. If you don't like I understand maybe not liking comics. If you don't like comics and you don't like games, what really is the point then?
Mm.
Am I, you know?
I don't know. That's for another podcast.
Okay.
A whole other podcast.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, of course, and it's true that it's a certain
other
kind of community.
Show Iron Man shot glass worth of
they have
worms.
An official show glass, which is a picture of which has Iron Man on it. Well, see, the thing is too that one of the things that's odd is that a lot of these conventions have gotten more popular from different areas. They've gotten more popular on the one hand from a kind of mainstream audience that is now seeing movies like Iron Man, which I'm sure we'll review, or Batman, or the X-Men. You know, those are all relatively recent that we started. get this big run on comic book movies. And I think that part of it then is sort of a mainstream fascination with this sort of thing. The other area that it's coming from, though, is sort of academia and the kind of intellectual side of things. We saw at this convention
a panel. Well, that is one of the differences in this instance is that there is a literary aspect. I mean, Gen Con does have a literary aspect in their fantasy novel section.
Which hopefully I'll be presenting, I hope.
But there is a very, I mean, comics are literature. So there was a, on the additional side of Gen Con, you're dealing more with gaming opportunities, while the additional side of Comic Con was a lot of different panels.
And a lot of
workshops.
This is related to graphic novels, which they've started to, you know, those have started to be taught. You've actually, there's some programs springing up with PhDs in graphic novels. So,
so we did see one panel, and I did actually find it to be one of the best panels I've ever watched.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was a series of people who had written various comic series and graphic novel series, but all of them from different, like one wrote about a series called Testament, which is, I guess, a graphic novel told from the perspective of the Old Testament, where they have these different heroes going in different directions. And they had a lot of interesting things to say about
what... they were discussing the concept of the hero.
Of the hero, right. And the question was, the name of the panel was based on this book, Our Gods Wear Spandex.
Right.
And it was this guy who had written a book talking about the allure of comic book heroes. And there were a lot of interesting things about how, you know, Captain America and those kinds of American superheroes had grown much darker since 9/11, how comic books reflected society, why we want our gods, why we want to see the physical qualities of our gods, how they relate to how they relate to the Greek gods, and all of those things. And I thought that they had a lot of very thoughtful things to say without making it, and they had a lot of big shots there. They had the guy who ran the Batman franchise for 30 years, you know, a lot of big people, all of whom were intelligent, all of whom had interesting things to say, and none of whom seemed to be annoyed to be there. You know, that's one of the things I always look for, are these people sort of annoyed by the questions, but they weren't. I mean, everyone just sort of was enjoying talking about things and having a chance to speak about a variety of different topics related to, you know, spirituality and the meaning of existence and the different archetypes of heroes. And so I thought that was pretty good.
Proud mommy point. Senevine was quite quiet through the whole panel.
Almost super heroic in her quietness, you might say.
She wasn't wearing spandex, though.
No. It was funny, though, at the very end, they said something like, and then kids want this. And she was like, ah! From the side, he's like, see, she agrees.
You know? That's true. She did make one. When Timberland...
So it was really interesting in that regard. And there were some things we didn't even get to see. I mean, they had a whole autograph section where Orson Scott Card is an author of Ender's Game and a variety of other books. Lou Ferrigno, who did the Incredible Hulk TV show back in the day. They had a lot of people doing autographing. They had gaming, as we already said. They even had some music stuff there. They had the Warped Tour sign up and everything. So there were a lot of different things there. And it didn't feel, I mean, you can tell me if I'm wrong. They had, the boxed set of Tintin, I found out, was coming out, which is very exciting. Anyone who knows Tintin out there, we might review that at some time. When I was a kid, I had all the Tintin comics. So I didn't feel quite as overwhelmed as I sometimes have at some of these things. I don't know if you noticed that, or if it was just that we were walking around with our friend Russ, who was doing all this filming, and so...
Well, it could be...
Press passes, by the way, so that was really neat.
Yeah, we did have press passes. Yep. The tickets could be a little expensive.
I think they were 40 bucks or something like that, but...
I mean, is that because you weren't interested in seeing everything, and so you were able to pick and choose?
That's a good question. Maybe so, because if I'm at a game convention, I would want to see everything, so maybe you're right about that.
But I mean, it was a little packed, and there was a lot to see.
I didn't find there was any nastiness, though. I mean, there were certainly people. There was one guy who walked by dressed as a super banana.
That's true.
And what was disturbing was it was a well-used super banana costume.
Again, that's what I'm talking about. Like, these people bring these. This is what, you know.
This is what they do. But it wasn't it wasn't disturbing, you know? It wasn't like going to something where you felt, oh, boy.
Everyone seemed very comfortable.
People seemed to were having fun.
Yeah.
Which is what you want, I think. And nobody was getting in. We even had a breakdancing Optimus Prime. I mean, really.
Very true.
How can you fail on that? So I thought that was all very interesting, and it seemed to me well laid out for what it was. So what would you say for a rating?
7.
Yeah, I'd say that's reasonable. I'd say a 7, probably in part because of the cost of the tickets. I mean, because normally you folks weren't going to be able to get press passes. We might have been able to try. Well, we work for a Upon Further Review, but I don't know if they really would have bought into that. So we had to do it through our friend Russ's Boing Boing auspices. And so I don't know, under normal circumstances, if that's what you could have done. So the $40...
The digital life isn't that
expensive.
That's
kind of pricey. No, and that stuff you can get more or less. There's ways to get that almost
free.
For cheap. Yeah. So I don't know.
Okay.
But it was a good experience. It was a lot of fun. We had a great time just because of the different things going on there.
I mean, if you love to people watch, it's definitely worth going.
Oh, yeah. people watch, in quotes. But it was a good time, and you should check it out. There are other Comic-Cons across the country, by the way. The biggest one is in San Diego every year. There's one in San Francisco called WonderCon, and then there's the big one is in San Diego. So there are lots of them all over the place, and you should check one out if you have the chance. Yep. And if you like comics, well, I mean, you shouldn't even...
My cousin is a big comic fan and a comic writer.
So was Russ's cousin, who was with us.
Yeah.
So there must be all these
He pretty cousins. Much went to spend money.
Yes.
And he had two backpacks.
Yes.
One on the front, one in the back, that he wanted to fill.
And he had a big grin on his face. He was very happy. So check it out. A 7 out of 10 for the New York Comic Con. Okay, last thing on the docket for review is What You Ought to Know. And you can find this at www.whatyououghttoknow.com. Just the words all run together, .com. This was submitted to us by Jed, who I assume is one of the producers or performers. I say assume because when you go to the website, this show, which is a video podcast, by the way, this show has almost no information about them. We have no information about the people who do
it. It has no information.
And the website itself is, although very, you know, it's not, there's not a lot to it, but it's very simple, but it's clear. You know, you see where everything is, you've got all the shows, and you can actually search for subjects. Or you can look by month, or you can click and look at all the 149 shows that are there. And then they have a thing for donations and subscribing to the feed and a suggestion box and a terms of use thing. And they have one little ad which just says Netflix. It's very, you know, unobtrusive.
Yeah.
And so that's it. And there's
so
no other information
it's
about
very
them.
Clean.
It's very clean.
And very easy to navigate.
It's very clean. And each one of the shows, and basically these are all about 4 minutes, I would say, maybe 4.5 minutes in length. Yeah. Each one of these is a video show all starring the same person. Again, I don't know his name because we don't find out anywhere, who tells you about things that you ought to know. And the things that you ought to know relate, some of them are taken from viewers. In fact, this show reminded us a lot of us to a degree because take on anything. Someone asked the questions about the Gutenberg Bible. They asked questions. Mm-hmm. Their latest one was about nukes or the bomb. And it's basically a kind of hip, funny, lighthearted treatment, but educational, of different subjects. So in the nukes, they're the bomb thing, he talked about what nuclear weapons could actually do, you know, how many had actually been tested on the United States, how it wasn't all about the Hollywood vision of nuclear weapons.
It's somewhat biased in what they, since they're taking these general topics, what they decide to choose to discuss.
Right,
what
that's
aspects
true.
They choose. I mean, they didn't describe the physics of nukes. They decided to explain that actually the majority of nukes have been set off on American soil.
Right.
So, I mean, in a way, I think their tack is things that they think you might not know. Right. Obviously,
right.
The topic is what you ought to know. So the things that they're taking a slightly different look at topics that you might not have heard about, or topics that you do know about of it, taking a different aspect of it that you might not have thought of before.
And it's all over the place. It's from things about like happiness, things you didn't know about the state of happiness, to the song Hail to the Chief, to, you know, capitalized medicine, to Mac versus PC, to public speaking. I mean, you know, it's just literally all over the map.
Right.
And the person who does the presentation is kind of a nice guy who's very engaging, and that I think is a big part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
They do some jokes that don't work. They're not as funny as they think they are at times. And so that, you know, occasionally there's a couple of dull thuds in there, but for the most part, they are funny most of the time. And what I like about it is it's a very good production value. And I love all these topics they take on. I love that they're willing to do the work to pay attention to these different things. And it's very clear that they're intelligent, and what they give you is a good encapsulated summary of it. The Mac versus PC thing. They went through a list of things and they talked about what's good about Macs, what's good about PCs.
I mean, you've been discussing the debate between the two for a while, and I liked kind of the summary.
They chose the wrong side of Macs, but that's okay.
Well, they didn't choose a side. They just said that they have Macs.
Yes.
You could say that you don't agree with their decision
personal
for themselves.
Choice.
Right.
Big problem. No, but it's very, so that was very much, and it was the kind of thing as we watched these shows, originally I watched the first couple of shows and I thought, oh, maybe they have a conservative agenda.
Right.
Then we looked at a couple more shows and we said, nope, here's one that attacks Fox News, clearly not a conservative agenda. Then I started thinking, okay, maybe these are like the Mythbusters type and their job is to go around and tell you, you thought you knew something, you didn't. But then we saw some other shows where that's not the case. Sometimes they're just sort of telling you things about tax and things that you might want to know about how to do them. So it's not all debunking myths that you believe to be true. It's not all one direction of the political spectrum. It really is all over the place. And to that degree, obviously, Clea and I are going to be big fans of that approach.
And they make a point, I mean, particularly in one episode we heard on journalism, that you can't just believe what they say, just as you shouldn't believe what anyone says on the internet. Which is important because we have no idea who their sources are. We have, I mean, we already said we don't know who they are. We have no idea what their sources are, what their facts or what they are based on.
Right. God help us if this is all Wikipedia based.
Right. I mean, as far as we know, it could be, or just lots of different Googling. But, you know, it gives you little tidbits and it brings up some topics that maybe you hadn't thought of. And it's really short and sweet and easy to listen to.
Yep. And fun. And I also feel that, despite the thing I said about the dull thud jokes, it often is amusing. And it also, I never get the sense that they're talking down to their audience, you know, even though I'm sure they have some listeners who are younger. You never get the sense that they are deliberately trying to talk down or talk above you. You know, the person is just this very nice, relaxed conversational style. It's very well edited. It reminds me a little bit oddly of editing the Ninja podcast, although the Ninja podcast is funnier, but it's designed to be funnier. I mean, this is also designed to be educational as well.
Yes, but it's well edited, very well produced. I think our only concern was sometimes he does that thing of doing a soft speaking.
Right, where he'll trail off. He'll say, because of this, or because of this. And he'll trail off.
For comedy value.
And that's fine, but when we literally can't hear it,
we can't hear.
That's a problem. So, you know, Greg, the consistency.
Every time he did it, Greg was like, what did he say?
What did he say? Was it funny? Did I have heard it?
I don't know what he said.
But I must say, I really like the show, actually. It really grew on me, and I think it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Rating?
8.
Yep, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think it's an 8 out of 10. I think if the volume was regularized, and the other suggestion I would make is tell us more about you.
Yeah,
I understand
you
the reason they want
sources.
To do that is because they want to focus on the topics, but as Clea said, knowing more about you and knowing more about your sources. Now, they have in each of these episodes links to different things, and
that
helps a little bit, but still, having some more information about where you get your sources from in a given episode,
and where
plus
maybe
more
we could get more information.
Exactly. Plus more about you yourself so that we can get to know this person, these people better.
Right.
That would also be a big help.
Yeah.
But on the whole, good show, guys. And it's something that people should check out. So make sure you check out whatyououghttoknow.com, and 8 out of 10 from us.
Right.
Okay. That's going to do it for us for this week. Thank you, as always, for listening. Thank you for sticking with us. Please continue to spread the word. We want to continue to try to spread out, develop things. And we should also say, by the way, that this summer, we are planning a cross-country trip, and it is entirely possible that we will again give you the second Upon Further Review video, Upon Further Review Tours America.
Well, it won't be all of America. It will just be
Upon Further Review tours several states
in
America.
Right.
In consecutive order.
And before that, we just wanted to let you know that in follow-up to our last episode, we are doing research into trying to find some kind of water filtration device so that we don't have to buy bottled water.
That's correct. So we are moving in the right path.
Right.
We're also going to move out to a farm.
Proud. No.
Right. Yes.
No.
Upon Further Review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
See you soon. The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!